Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and psychic medium Sherry. The show is about to begin. Well, good evening, everyone, and once again, thanks for taking the time to tune in to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm Jason Ophir, joined by the beautiful and talented psychic medium Sherry. We are back from a brief hiatus. Sherry, how are you doing?
Pretty good. This is the first, it's been a while because I've been on tour. So, it's nice to be back home and, just kind of rolling in, just doing a lot of Chinese medicine treatments and psychic readings. And I'm glad to be back on Paranormal Horizons. It's good to have you back, Jason.
Yeah, well, nothing new to report here. It's just usual work every day and see a bunch of interesting stuff, but you got us a great returning guest. Hasn't been on for a couple of years at least, and he's on hold. We should get him on. I think we have a lot to talk about, but you got Stan Gordon back.
The famous Stan Gordon. Yes. Hi, Stan. Welcome to Paranormal Horizon.
Good to hear your voices again.
Yay.
Yeah, so thanks for taking the time. We know how busy you are. We were chatting a little bit before the show started, and I mean, I guess since it's been a while, how about a little bio on yourself and what you do just to kind of refamiliarize the listeners?
Oh, it goes back quite a while. I started this in 1959 as a 10-year-old kid who was interested in science, and how I got involved, I happened to hear a radio show back in October of 1959, was talking about flying saucers, haunted houses, strange occurrences, and I was a curious kid, and I wanted to know if these people were telling the truth, so I began to make a lot of trips to my local library in Greensburg, PA, read all the books they had on the subject. I was 16 years old when the incident happened near Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. I've been out in the field ever since then doing field investigation of UFOs and Bigfoot and cryptids and other anomalous activity. 1969, I set up a hotline for the public to report UFO sightings. It's been active ever since. My phones ring many times day and night with reports, so I get a lot of phone and email reports from mainly Pennsylvania, but I get calls from all over the country and sometimes out of the country. And in 1970, I founded the first of three volunteer research groups that for many years would investigate UFOs and Bigfoot, et cetera, across the state of Pennsylvania. I had those groups for many, many years. I no longer have them, but I'm still in touch with other researchers out there, and I still investigate. And it's been interesting. I get, again, reports come in here all the time, every year, and last year was an exceptionally active year for a lot of daylight strange reports from UFO and Bigfoot sightings and a lot of other odd things. So it was quite a fantastic year last year.
Yeah, sounds busy. But so what's going on out there? We were talking briefly before the show started with sightings. And, of course, I have to admit UFOs is my favorite subject. But I haven't been keeping my finger on the pulse on that subject. But what's been going on out in your neck of the woods?
Well, first of all, let me tell your listeners this. I've been doing this now for going on 65 years. I have never personally seen a UFO or a Bigfoot or a ghost or anything I could not explain, believe it or not. I've interviewed thousands of UFO witnesses and hundreds of people who claim they've seen Bigfoot or cryptids or other strange things. And I truly believe that something is going on out there without any doubt. And I will also tell you this, since I've been out in the field since 1965, one thing I found years ago, it still remains the same today. Many credible people call in with reports of seeing strange things. But quite often, when you take the time to properly investigate the report, especially with UFO sightings, many turn out to be misidentifications of natural or man-made objects. So there were many reports in the last couple of years, for example, Starlink satellites. They look very strange moving across the sky on a clear night, but and many people were shaken by seeing them, but that's what they turned out to be. But I can tell you, I've investigated multitudes of incidents that there's no way that you can easily explain them away. And those are the kind of cases I'd like to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. What are some notable ones that you've been involved with that are, you know, substantiated?
Well, there's we could sit and talk for days about this. And just to give you an example of just a few of the things last year. There were many reports last year and actually the year before. A lot of reports last year in daylight, beautiful afternoons, of very large, solid, cylindrical, cigar-shaped objects, wingless objects, just hovering in beautiful skies and just fading away, not accelerating, leaving, just fading away. But in some cases, the objects were moving so slow across the sky that different witnesses from widespread areas would tell me, they said they didn't know how a conventional aircraft could stay up in the air moving that slow. So those were consistent reports. And if you go through some of the articles on my website, you'll see some of the photographs. But then some of the sightings were even much more interesting. One of the things that really stands out in the last few years, and I've known about these cases since the 1960s, a lot of people didn't talk about them back then, but I've called them mini UFOs for years. And we're seeing an increase in these type of reports over more recent years. I believe it was 2022. We had the biggest surge of these cases ever historically. And these are these small spherical objects. Many people talk about them as orbs of light or balls of light below the ground. And they're generally, the smallest ones I've noted are about the size of oversized fireflies. But most of them are about the size of a golf ball or baseball, or around a foot or two in diameter. They're generally spherical, but there's been some other cases where they're not. Generally spherical, generally luminous sources of different colors. Quite often they're transparent. We've had reports sometimes of something inside of some of the objects. And very commonly, even though they're very bright in many cases, the light stays within the objects. There's very little light emitted or surrounding them as they move around. And I've had some cases over the years where they approach people very close and they look solid or metallic as well, but they're not as common as just the luminous sources. So those are really interesting, and some of those cases in the last couple of years are just amazing, because now these things are being seen in daylight and they're coming within feet of people. And then it gets even stranger because we're getting reports of these inside of people's homes now as well. So these are significant cases. And this is something that's rarely ever talked about in the field. However, there's another aspect to this, and I've been finding that there's a lot of strange things going on with the Bigfoot phenomena, with the UFO phenomena, and there's a lot more to it than most people realize. For example, not only in Pennsylvania, but around the country, in areas we have a history of Bigfoot sightings, very commonly witnesses reporting these small balls of light low in the trees, or in some cases coming out of the woods and coming very close to the witnesses. Sometimes reports of other type of light phenomena being reported. But this is just an example of what's going on. And I can give you some great examples of some of these cases just in the last year or two.
I've never heard of mini UFOs. That's interesting. Is there any theories on where they originate from or what they are?
Well, a lot of people are not aware of them, but you're beginning to hear more about them. You're starting to see some of the TV shows talking about it. There's been more books written about this now in the last few years, and people are talking about this more. Even Bigfoot researchers now are talking more about this type of thing. I talked about this and wrote about this back in the 1970s. And Sherry might recall, I'm sure we talked about this in the past, in 1973, here in Pennsylvania, first, we had the biggest outbreak of UFO sightings ever documented. There were hundreds and hundreds of sightings all year long. And a lot of these were low-level sightings of large structured objects low to the ground. And back then, of course, you've got to remember, there's no internet, there's no cell phones like today. And it was an amazing time. A lot of the local and statewide newspapers were picking up the stories in some of their areas. Luckily, my first volunteer research group, which we had scientists and engineers and police officers and former military people volunteering their times to go out in the field with me to investigate, and I had set up to cover the state of Pennsylvania by 1973. So we were able to get a lot of these cases very quickly. To our surprise, we were getting a lot of referrals from the news media, from law enforcement across the state, and it was an amazing time. But it got much more exciting in the summer of 73 when we had the biggest outbreak of Bigfoot sightings ever documented. And that's when we began to realize that there was a lot stranger aspects of Bigfoot than just being an unknown primate, something which I thought it always had been until these cases began to come to our attention. And then some weird things showed up. For example, one of those reports, among numerous others, was an incident that happened in September of 73 north of Pittsburgh, where two women were waiting for a friend to pick them up that evening. They see the 7-8 foot tall, huge, hairy Bigfoot with white hair running across the roads to the woods, but in one of its hands it was carrying a small ball of light. And a short time later, this object came across the sky, and from that object was projected a beam of light down into the woods where the creature ran into. And that's when we're just beginning to hear more and more about these kind of reports. But now over the years, we're hearing more and more. We're getting some amazing cases now in the last few years. And I'll just read you one from last year, 2023, just an example. So this is in Westmoreland County, Pennsylvania, Mount Pleasant Township. This woman awakens at 1:30 in the morning, happens to look out the window. She notices a solid, bright wall ball of light about the size of a basketball, about 8 feet from the window, about 7-8 feet above the ground. It's moving between the side of the house and the front porch. It moves steadily past the window. It then continues to move past the yard and the driveway, begins to rise higher into the sky and over the roof of the home, of the neighbor's home, moved away in the distance in the sky towards the mountains and went out of sight. I mean, that's just an example, but there's many more vivid reports as well.
Could some of those reports be that phenomenon like ball lightning? I've never seen it, and I know nothing about it. I just know the term.
Well, that's the first one we check. None of these cases I'm telling you about had the weather conditions for ball lightning. Most of these cases, it was either a beautiful day or a nice day or a clear evening. There was no weather conditions for ball lightning. And what people reported is nothing like what ball lightning is reported as we know about it. Let me give you a couple really interesting examples. So this goes back now to October 22, 2022. This first case up in Fayette County. Fayette County is probably one of the most active areas in the country for UFO and Bigfoot reports, especially the areas along the Chestnut Ridge. And the Chestnut Ridge is a mountain range, sections of which go through Westmoreland, Fayette, and Indiana County in southwest Pennsylvania, extends down to a few miles outside of Morgantown, West Virginia. For years and years, there have been incidents all along the ridge. Once again, though, there are certain areas along the ridge which are even more active and have a lot of history. One of them is up here in Derry Township outside of Latrobe. And in Fayette County, again, very, very busy with reports. So in this one case in October of 23, around 6 o'clock in the morning, it was pretty cold. And this fellow was just in his robe and his moccasins, his slippers, and his wife found him sound asleep on the porch, which she would never do, dressed like that in that cold weather. She had trouble waking him up, and when he was awakened, he told her that he was going out to get the newspaper just been delivered. As he's walking outside towards the paper box, there's this ball about a foot, I think a smaller ball of light, just right there at eye level between him and the paper box, and he got very close to it. And he told her he got suddenly so tired he couldn't stay awake, and he went and laid down on the chair on the porch and fell asleep. Now, interestingly, I believe it was 3 days later, about 40 miles away, outside of Ligonier, PA, which is way up in the mountains, which is between the Chestnut Ridge and the Laurel Ridge area, and that's very active as well. It's 2:30 in the morning, and this woman awakens to go to the restroom. She has one of these old historical homes, high ceilings. Anyhow, she comes out of the restroom, and about 5 feet away is this solid black, about foot and a half diameter, solid blue, I should say, dark blue sphere. They have like a dark mass moving around, like a grayish mass moving around the side of it. She told me, she said, I took one step towards it. I felt like a slight electrical jolt, And then I got so tired, I couldn't stay awake and went to bed. And she told me the next day she felt very groggy, very weak, very sickly. And she said to me, I've been an insomniac for years. I never fall asleep like that. So you had two cases with similar physiological effects 3 days apart, and they had no way of knowing about each other.
Wow. Crazy.
What do you think about that, Sherry?
That's amazing.
And that's just and then besides all these low-level reports of the last few years, then we have, I mean, just incredible reports of large triangular objects. And there was a number of these reports from different parts of the state last year. We've had reports of black triangles for years, many at low level. I can give you some great stories. I'll give you one first off the top of my head from maybe about 2015, because this brings up another effect that a lot of people are not aware of, and this is happening more and more as well. And I remember I went up to the scene. We went up with a team to investigate this incident. It was up in a rural area. And this gentleman, he was early morning, it was around 10 o'clock in the morning, beautiful morning. He was sitting there in his kitchen next to the window drinking coffee. His dog was lying on the rug next to him, and the dog goes with him everywhere. And as he's drinking coffee and he's watching, looking outside, such a beautiful sunny day, suddenly it got completely black outside, like a terrible storm just instantaneously came out of nowhere. And he thought it was so unusual. So he grabs his fully charged cell phone and calls to his dog to come with him. The dog refused to go outside, which the dog goes with him everywhere. So the guy picks up his phone and walks out to his driveway, which is close by. 500 feet above his head is this huge, solid, black triangle that's completely silent. So what does he do? He grabs his fully charged phone and aims it to take a picture. And moments later, his fully charged battery is completely drained of energy. And there was other EM electromagnetic effects on the at the property as well and other equipment that morning. Those are the kind of things that are going on more and more. We're hearing this from people even last year who have attempted to take pictures or videos with the cameras. In some cases, at least one person I can think of saw the object on the screen of the camera in the video mode. When he went to play it back, there was nothing there. In other cases, the batteries that are fully charged are drained within minutes. And then we also hear reports from last few years of people who had some very high-tech night vision equipment trying to take pictures, videos of the low-level balls of light, and the same thing happened. There was malfunction in the equipment or the batteries completely failed. That's another thing that very few people were hearing about.
What do we think these things are? Are they like alien probes or some sort of secret government technology? I mean...
Are we talking about those mini objects? You talking about the UFOs or UAPs?
The mini objects. Yeah,
well,
the small orbs.
Well, when I first knew about these back in the 60s, my first thought was we're dealing with something who, wherever they originated from, was sending back video and audio information somewhere. The more I know about these things, the stranger they are, because there's a Bigfoot connection to them. There's some connection with cryptids, other cryptids, and these balls of light. And then you have these really strange reports again. And I'll tell you about one that just happened several months ago. Again, extremely strange report. But I don't think anybody knows what's going on with these things. And, you know, of course, the government is talking about what they call them now as UAP, Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena. And I think that's a good terminology for it, because I think that they probably are finding the same thing I found years ago, that this is a much more complex phenomena, that what I find from what I've worked on, I've done thousands of cases, that there's more than one origin to the unknown category of the UFO mystery. Maybe a small number might be extraterrestrial, but I'm telling you more and more data, and I'm not the only one's finding this now, both with UFOs and even Bigfoot, maybe other cryptids, that there's a physical and non-physical aspect of these things. These things, they come and they go. They, as weird as it sounds, they appear to be able to change physical form. So with a lot of UFO reports, and you've already heard about some of the military reports over the last few years, and it's similar, but I have incidents here in Pennsylvania in daylight of very large structured objects low to the ground that are just hovering and moving slow, and they slowly begin to fade away and vanish. In some cases, they just suddenly appear and disappear. In other cases, they change from one physical form into another. And that's something, again, a lot of people are not aware of, and it's just very, very fascinating. And there was a very, very interesting incident that just happened in recent months here in Fayette County. It was November 16th near the town of Point Marion, PA. Luckily, one of my research associates is a real high-tech guy. Jim Brown lives in Fayette County, so he's able to get to these cases pretty quickly. So here's what happened. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It was an unusually nice day for November of 23. It was around 60 degrees. It was warm and clear. It was a beautiful day. So this neighbor, where this happened to look out a window, and she looks over her neighbor's home, and about 50 feet above the roof of the house, it's a solid black triangular object. Well, that was strange enough, but as she's watching, this triangular object is changing physical form from a triangle to a square and back to a triangle. So she's watching this thing and trying to figure it out. She thought, I better call my neighbor and tell her what's going on over her roof. So she tries ringing the neighbor, and there's no answer. So she thought, well, I better go over and see if I can find her. So she walks over to the neighbor's home and finds she's outside working in the yard, had no idea about this thing hovering over her home until it was pointed out to her. So they're both watching this thing, describing it to Jim, and I interviewed the other witnesses. Jim interviewed both of them. And anyhow, they told him, describe what was taking place, and they continued to watch this thing until it was about 500 feet in the sky, continued to change form, and then it kept rising higher into the sky to look just like a dark spot in the sky and was gone. Those are the kind of things that are happening. I think we're doing something, again, that has a physical and a non-physical aspect to it, and for lack of a better term, we'll call it interdimensional for now.
There's a lot of crazy stuff going on out there in the world. That's kind of scary, is something, you know, above a house. How big was this thing?
Well, you know, they were saying it was really hard to judge size, mainly because of the fact of how it was moving. And, in fact, here, let me see if I can find a part of this. Maybe I can get the part of the report here. She explained that when she saw the black guy, it was changing shape. It was hard to give a definitive size that it was changing. Sometimes it appeared as a square that was drawing itself into a triangular form. One corner of the square would pull itself into the body, and at the same time, another area along the edge would extend out to become another point. So it kept physically changing the whole time. But apparently it was taking up a pretty good area, that part of the roof, and it was fairly large. We don't know, but we've heard these reports before. I have similar things going on. I've had another case years ago on a major highway where they watched an object that I believe was a big sphere, and it changed to a big rectangular object, I believe it was, and then back to a circular object. And it's just amazing the things that are happening out there people aren't aware of.
Well, it sounds kind of terrifying. I mean, what do you think, Sherry? I don't know what I would think if I'd seen something like that. That's really mind-bending, especially because it's changing its shape.
That's crazy. I want to ask you a question. Dan, when you get a report like this, how do you know, and you're receiving the report in, but how do you know, or do you get a feeling whether these reports are legit or somebody's imagination?
Well, you know, like I said, I've interviewed thousands of people. And a lot of the cases over there, my teams would go out and we'd interview people in person as best we could. But, you know, you've learned to interview people. You learn how to ask questions. You're looking for those little details. You're looking for how they describe things. You go back over and over with them again, describe the details. And so many of these people are giving me these little details that they wouldn't normally even know about, something that's come up on the patterns over the years, the similarities with the effects and what people are reporting. And what's so interesting is sometimes we'll get reports from other people on that same date and time, sometimes months later, to verify the report, or other people within days will call us about seeing something within the same time. That's what was happening last year with some of these reports that were just so amazing. Let me read your report from down eastern PA. This was September of last year. So this around 9 o'clock at night, and this lady's walking her dog. She sees this bright flash of light like a starburst, and the dog, which is deaf, was in a sitting position looking up towards the sky. That's when the witness looked up to see what the dog was looking at, and hovering about 300 feet over her building was a large, solid black triangle object with rounded corners. There was enough moonlight to illuminate the area around the object. The witness described the surface having a flat, matte black color. She had a clear view of the undercarriage and back section of the object. There were no individual lights on the object. She could only describe the size as massive and much larger than medical helicopters that fly over her area regularly. When interviewed, the witness said she described what looked like two circular protuberances on the back section of the object she thought might be vents. It was in that area she noticed she surmised like an orange-colored metal cooling off from the intense heat, and she said this cooling effect did not occur all at once. She also observed what looked like some type of indentations or protrusions on the bottom surface. As the object hovered, she noticed a deep yet barely audible humming sound, and then a one-click type noise as the object began to slowly move. Suddenly, the object moved so fast that it looked like a smudge, and she never saw it move off the sky again. It just vanished. That is very, very typical of these type of reports. Sometimes they just instantaneously just vanish from sight.
Wow.
Do you think that some of this or a lot of it could be some sort of like Lockheed Skunk Works classified technology? Oftentimes I wonder about, because, you know, we don't know what's going on, what the government's doing. And
well, I can tell you, this has been going on for years and years. I mean, we're hearing these reports now. You know, I've been doing this for a long, long time. And we had amazing cases even back in the 60s. I mean, during the 60s, there was a lot of incidents of solid metallic objects very, very low to the ground. And one of my favorite cases, in fact, I wrote about it, I think, in one of my books. I think it was called the Astonishing Encounters book. And this was February 1968. And there were two brothers, and unfortunately, both of them are now deceased. The younger brother was a great believer in UFOs. The older brother did not like the subject, and he and his brother would get over terrible arguments, and they would have fistfights over UFOs, believe it or not. So the older brother ends up going into the Navy. He got a very high-level security clearance, worked one of our most advanced aircraft carriers, and worked with our most advanced aircraft at the time. So in February 68, he gets out of the Navy. He just got married. He and his wife rent a small little farmhouse out here in Westmoreland County out in the country. And I interviewed both of these fellas. But anyhow, what happened was, on that particular afternoon, it was supposed to start snowing. So he happened to look out his window, and he had a little lake nearby, a little pond. And he looks out the window, and he couldn't believe what he's seeing. Here's this huge, solid object, kind of a battleship gray color, kind of a big elliptical object, kind of elongated with a big dome on top, kind of an oval-shaped thing. There appeared to be like portals in it. And there was also like a catwalk around the center of the object. And he calls his wife to come out because he couldn't believe what he was seeing. And they both look at this thing and they step outside. So this thing's only like 50 feet away and about 50 feet off the ground. This guy knew our most advanced aircraft. He had never seen anything like this before. It got even stranger. These two small little humanoid creatures around 4 or 4.5 feet tall came out on the catwalk like they were communicating with each other, and one of them was looking directly at them. So I think the wife ran to the house and called the brother in Greensburg, so it was about 20 minutes away, and tell him about what they were seeing out there. It was starting to snow pretty hard. So that guy, the brother and his wife, they come out to this area, and they're all there. And it was starting to snow pretty hard, but they're in their vehicle, and this thing is about 100 feet off the ground, but they're underneath it, and they're watching this thing. All of them couldn't believe it or disbelieve watching this thing. Suddenly, it climbs into the sky and looks, a moment later, looks like a very bright red star going into the heavens and gone. So they called the local airport, the Latrobe Airport, and the controller told him, you're one of many other people calling in reporting the same thing. Well, I can tell you, the brother didn't believe, became a believer. And that's so common to what I deal with all the time. Whether it's a UFO sighting, Bigfoot sighting, cryptid account, I have people calling me from all walks of life. I mean, educated people, police officers, first responders, pilots. I've talked to many, many of them over the years, even in recent weeks. Many of these people, their lives are changed because they've seen something now that weren't supposed to exist, and now they know it does, and they're baffled by it. And a lot of these are educated people, and most of them would never believe these things could exist until they saw it themselves.
Wow.
I want to see it. You know, it's funny. I've seen a lot of weird stuff out in the skies and had my own UFO experiences, but I've never seen like a classic disc or been close to a UFO, and that would just be amazing. Maybe that will happen one day for both of us.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you about some of the historical cases I work on. And again, these are the kind of things that people are not aware of. I mean, there's some people around here and some other areas I've written about some of these cases, but this was September 3rd, 1987. And this was here in outside of Greensburg, PA, on Route 30, a busy four-lane highway. So at 8 o'clock at night, you had multiple witnesses, including some law enforcement personnel. They see this huge object, again, looked like a huge oversized Goodyear blimp almost, elongated, solid metallic-looking, at least 300 foot long, multiple lights on it, completely silent. It's only about 300 feet over top of the high-tension power lines by what was then the Green Gate Mall. And this object moves across the power lines, goes right over the vehicles, right over Route 30, right on the other side of the highway is a power substation. This huge object moving horizontal turns vertical in the sky at that time, and when it does, the whole area, including the mall, lost power. And most of the power came back on a short time later. The object went back to a horizontal position and continued moving across the sky. Many people saw it. And when the engineers from the power company went to investigate behind the part of the mall where the theaters were, I was told they found all three of the master fuses had been blown in the circuitry, something that is just unheard of. And it was a very, very interesting case. Years ago, I talked about this. I still talk about it. The pattern I found is many close-range, low-level UFO sightings and many encounters with Bigfoot and other cryptids often occur in the vicinity of high-energy sources. So you have many sightings around power plants, high-tension power lines, radio towers, cell phone towers, bodies of water, gas wells, gas lines, etc. That something continues to be reported.
Do you ever get people contacting you saying that they were abducted by aliens?
I was probably one of the first in the country to investigate alleged abduction cases back in the late 60s and for a number of years afterwards. And we did investigate some. The problem is this. When you get involved in some of these missing time cases, abduction cases, they are very involved. You can spend weeks, months, and years on one case. Well, we just didn't have the capability to do that. I mean, we interviewed people, and we monitored some of these cases. I can tell you, there's one person I'm still in touch with today, and I lost track in time. I've probably been in touch with her now for probably over 40-some years, 45 years. And there were many other people during that time. I cannot tell you that these people were abducted by extraterrestrials, but something happened in their lives that changed what happened to them. And some of them were a very, very intriguing case. Some of these were extremely credible people with good positions. They had no reason to make up the story. There was one report I kind of remember was interesting, and it was a distance from where I was located, another part of the state, and some of the other members of my group had been investigated. But I did go up one time to interview the person myself. And this is from memory from years and years ago, but I remember something about he was married, and they had moved in this place, and for whatever reason, he would begin during the night to wake up early morning hours, and somebody would tell him to go out into the middle of the woods, where allegedly he would go aboard this object that was landed, and various type of physical effects experiments were conducted on him. And I remember when I talked to him, and he seemed pretty credible. And the other people in my group thought he was very credible, too. And the one thing that stood out, he told me about, and this was back years ago before you heard much about these stories, he said, these little beings, he said, they look similar to a Pillsbury Doughboy. And I always thought that was kind of interesting. And so I've interviewed different people, but the one person I've been in touch with now for years, she was just a little young girl who was missing. There was apparently a big search for her in the area. They had searched around the woods and the fields for hours, and then they found her standing in the middle of the field that they already searched, and she told them she was there the whole time. She had no idea why they were looking for her. From the time she was a young girl, she began to experience various type of paranormal phenomena, apparitions. As time went on, she had UFO sightings, Bigfoot encounters. Sometimes other people were with her. As time went on, her children began to experience these things, and now her grandchildren. And I find this in other cases as well. And this is much more complex. And there's a whole pattern to this now, because some of these people, well, it's very complex. Let me tell you this. Almost anybody can be at the right time to have a UFO or Bigfoot sighting. And many people see these things and are happening more and more in more populated areas, not just wooded areas. But then there's this another group of people, and many of these people I've been in touch with for years. These people don't even know each other. And what's intriguing is, like, for example, the last 2 years, when one of them is experiencing something unusual or has an increase in activity, so do so many others. And they're all independently calling me, telling me about this without knowing about the other people. And a lot of these people have a long history of these things going on. There's patterns to it. There's similarities to it. It's really amazing.
Yeah, when you hear stuff from different, you know, people like with sightings and stuff like that, where people are reporting the same thing around the same time, it really makes you wonder, kind of makes it to where it's probably not made up once multiple people are reporting it.
Yeah, it's very intriguing because there's no way these people know about what other people are describing, but they're telling me similar type of experiences within the same time period.
That's strange. Wow. I wonder if they're being picked out, like, you know, certain, it's random, kind of random different occurrences. Weird.
Well, as I've looked at these things over the years, there's so much we don't understand. And I think a lot of what we're dealing with now, we're dealing with something that is so beyond our present scientific understanding. Nobody understands it. I don't think the government understands it. They're all aware these things are going on. But I just think it's very strange and unusual. Some of it has patterns. Some of it makes absolutely no sense at all. And with the Bigfoot phenomena, you know, going back to 1973, and prior to that, you know, 1960s, I was investigating Bigfoot sightings here in Pennsylvania. There had been a long history of Bigfoot in Pennsylvania going back to the Native Americans. There were newspaper accounts in the 1800s about these incidents. And, of course, back in those days, they never called it Bigfoot. They called it the wild man of the forest. And I had always thought, from what I knew about Bigfoot at that time period, we're probably dealing with some type of unknown primate. Well, as the early 70s, especially 1973, comes around, that's when we began to realize we're dealing with something that's much, much stranger. I mean, one of the first things was, in many instances, we'd have a Bigfoot account. My teams, or in sometimes the police departments, or both of us, would be on the scene of an incident within minutes to hours after they occurred. And this is all year round, including the wintertime and the snow. So here's what's so odd. You had these series of strange footprints, big tracks, very unusual-looking tracks, with big strides that went a distance and then abruptly just stopped when there should have been more tracks. And that's going on all over the country now, too, by the way, being reported. There was no way under the conditions we found it this could have been fabricated. I mean, I had an anthropologist in my group. I had some forensic people. I had people who were kind of experts in these fields. We could tell the difference between a hoax track, and we could tell the difference something like this could be fabricated, and there was no way. Anyhow, it got stranger and stranger during 73, when, again, we from widespread areas miles and miles away, nobody knew back then what other people were reporting because there wasn't any phones, cell phones, or Internet like today. And then we began to have UFO sightings in a certain area. Within minutes to hours or days later, you have a Bigfoot sighting or vice versa. And then, Sherry, you might remember there were some of those amazing cases that we documented. They're very detailed. I can share some of these with you if you like, which sure. Indicated there was some connection between the UFO and Bigfoot sightings. And one thing I want to stress, I keep stressing on these shows, I am not saying that Bigfoot is a passenger in a spaceship or a spacecraft from another planet, because we don't know for sure what these objects really are or where they come from. That's still open to speculation. And there's a correlation. And if you want me to talk about some of those cases, I can.
Sure. I've always been skeptical of Bigfoot. Maybe that's because I've never seen one. We've talked to people that say they're interdimensional beings or they're just, you know, that sort of thing. I've always been kind of skeptical. But has there ever been any kind of like solid genetic proof that Bigfoot exists? Because I watch like YouTube and there's all these videos. It's hard to know what's fake, what's not. But has there been any like scientific evidence of Bigfoot's existence?
Well, you know, again, that's always been the interesting part of the Bigfoot mystery. These things, something like the typical Bigfoot in the United States, have been seen all over the world in many, many different countries for years and years. There's different regional names for them. There's similarities in a lot of the descriptions. But scientifically, the only thing that people have talked about is that it could have been Gigantopithecus. But there's just been no evidence that I'm aware of or anybody else's that these sightings are connected with that type of report, with that type of species, that there's just very little physical evidence about to support what was seen so many years ago. But there's a lot more cases now. First of all, one, there are multitudes of interviews I've done with witnesses, even the last few years, who have seen these things at very close range. And I can give you many examples. I mean, we've had people who actually have been within 5 to 10 feet away from these things. Many of the sightings last year were in daylight, 40, 50 feet away from people. And even in the 70s, we had many close-range reports. So these are not misidentification of bear, which, yes, we've had. We've had misidentification of big, shaggy dogs. We've had misidentification of hunters in camouflage suits. We know about those. These are really detailed reports. And you've got the physical sometimes the physical evidence afterwards. We've made many casts of tracks. You got to remember, a lot of the cases we were investigating, these were something we heard about years later. We were on the scene of these incidents within minutes to hours after they occurred. But let me give you an example, just one of my favorite reports, and there are so many. So This is outside of Latrobe, PA, during this massive wave of Bigfoot sightings in 1973. And I generally don't use names, but I was given permission to use the name of this witness. He's long deceased, and this fellow actually, after seeing this thing, he actually went on TV and radio with me at the time after it happened, because this fellow's name was Chester. He was a retired coal miner. Chester was a complete non-believer in Bigfoot. The night before this happened, this was September, this was Labor Day in 1973 in September. He lived out in the country not far from the Latrobe Airport out in the country. It had been in the newspaper that there had been Bigfoot sightings around the area, and he and his wife and neighbors were on their patio that evening laughing about Bigfoot. He's making fun of Bigfoot, and, come on, Bigfoot, I want to see you, I want to see you. Well, about 4:30 in the morning, he and his wife are in their mobile home sleeping when there's this big bang against his mobile home. So he awoke immediately because he thought somebody was breaking into the little garage behind his mobile home because he had a nice antique car in there. He looked out the window to his patio, and about a foot away from him on the opposite side of the window, looking away from him towards the neighbor's home, is this 8 to 9 foot tall, huge hair-covered creature. He could see it had his hands folded like in the front looking away from him. It was towering over the top of his trailer. Poor Chester had emphysema from working in the coal mine, and he immediately went over and kept the lights out and awakened his wife. He said, that thing they call Bigfoot, it's on our patio. She goes over like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? So anyhow, poor Chester again, he could hardly breathe. He was so shaken. Back in those days, you might remember that we had real telephones with a dial. We had real operators. So they found their way over to the phone. On the way over, they bumped into the wall, which may have scared it away. He dials O for the operator. He asked for help. He needed the state police right away. She connected him to state police and told the operator, dispatcher, this thing they call Bigfoot, it's at my house. I heard the radio call go out, and they had 6 troopers there and 3 cars. Within half an hour, the state police called me to come out to the scene after they got there. And poor Chester was shaken very badly. Chester had cut his grass that evening. So this thing had made large tracks in the fresh grass and went across his patio and went down over the hill. Some of the troopers followed the tracks for a short distance. Anyhow, poor Chester and his wife were so frightened, they packed their clothes and they left there for a short time. When they came back, Chester actually went on radio and TV with me to tell people he's not laughing anymore. Now he knows for sure there's something out there. And that's the kind of thing you get from people.
Was he pretty shooken up?
It was very shaken. That's why they packed up and left their house for temporarily. They were afraid to stay there.
Oh, boy. What would you do, Jason?
I'd get a rifle and protect myself. I don't know, but I wouldn't shoot anything because you never know if it's somebody in an ape costume.
True, but again, in so many instances, people are seeing these things, even in daylight, at very, very close range. And that's what's going on. There's so many reports coming in from so many people from widespread areas who are seeing these things. In some cases, over the years, we've had more than one creature seen together. And let me see here. So here's another one. This is August 30th, 23, up in the Chestnut Ridge, outside of Derry. 12:30 in the afternoon, this person's walking her dogs. She's walking along when suddenly the dog began to, it was staring directly at the woods, and the big dog began to growl. The dog never growls. The witness sat down on the ground, and the large dog trying to calm the dog down. And that's when she noticed something large was standing among the trees as though trying to camouflage itself. She could see a tall creature, about 7 foot tall, covered with a mix of black and brown hair. The arms hung down to the side. She could not see the length of the arms due to the foliage in front of the creature. The creature stared in their direction. She immediately became very frightened, grabbed her dogs, and went to the house. That's just an example. But sometimes these things are completely out where people can see from head to toe. I had a case about 2 years ago, probably 25 miles or so from this place, way in the mountains. I was up there several times. Very credible family. They've had both large and small Bigfoot on their property. And I believe it was about 2 years ago, really early morning, it was just dusk, and the wife was out walking around her property, happens to look around, she's near a little building on her property, and here's this 8.5 to 9 foot tall Bigfoot carrying a deer over its right shoulder coming up out of the woods. It stopped. They both looked at each other. When it saw her, it made a loud grunt, then turned around, started running across through the field into the woods and gone. Those are the kind of reports that are coming in.
Gee.
Yeah, but you ask why there's no bodies. I did for years too, but this is what I'm telling you now. The evidence is more and more, and these are the kind of things you don't hear much about. I have a whole lecture on this I give. It's called Strange Aspects of Elusive Bigfoot and Why There's No Bodies. I told you about the tracks that just end abruptly. That doesn't make any sense either, but we have many instances now where people are seeing these things at close range. And while quite often they look physically solid, there's other cases where they look more misty or foggy. And sometimes part of the body is out of focus while the rest of the body is solid. People tell me they're riding down the road and these things suddenly appear out of nowhere in the middle of the road. They see these things from head to toe, and this is other cryptids as well, and suddenly they move at this and suddenly they vanish and they're gone. But the one case that convinced me that we're dealing with something, again, is not a physical flesh and blood animal, was back during the end of that big wave from 73 to 1974. And this was February 6, 1974, way up in the mountains of Fayette County, Pennsylvania. And some of your listeners will probably remember the time period. Here in the United States, there was a big national trucker strike. There was gas rationing. A lot of people remember the gas rationing. So I couldn't get gas in my air until the next morning. I couldn't get up to early morning hours. Anyhow, because of some of the violence on the highways during that time, here in Pennsylvania, the National Guard and the state police were patrolling together. So you had some men from both units up on this incident. They arrived on the incident that evening. And so what happened was around 10:30 that night, somewhere around there. I could be off on the time. This woman's sitting in her home in a little cabin deep in the mountains watching television. She began to hear this commotion on a little front porch. She had some empty soda cans out there. Somebody was knocking the soda cans around. And a couple weeks before, there was a pack of wild dogs, and she figured, I bet the dogs are back. I'll just grab my 16-gauge double-barrel shotgun, a loaded chamber, and I'll shoot over their heads and scare them away. So that's what she does. She loads one chamber. She walks up to the front door. She turns on the switch to light up the outside porch. She opens the door and steps out. 6 feet in front of her is a 7-foot-tall, hair-covered Bigfoot that as soon as she turned the light on, it put his arm straight up over his head. What does she do? She pulls the trigger and shoots right into it. She said there's this bright flash of light, like the flash on a strobe on a camera, and it physically vanished in front of her. That's the short part of the story.
Wow. That's crazy.
Well, these are the kind of things that you hardly ever hear about. Now, there's a lot of people in the Bigfoot field that don't want to talk about these things. I knew about this back in the 70s when I was in touch with a lot of the well-known names in the Bigfoot field in those days from the United States and other countries. And I was aware of these cases, and I was starting to write about them because I thought it was important that people know about them. And I talked to many of these other researchers, and they said, well, yeah, we know about these stories too. We're familiar with them, but we're not going to write about it because we don't want to be laughed at by our fellow researchers. So they didn't. But my position was this is important to get out, and maybe it'll encourage other people to talk about it. Well, now, over the years, it's being talked about more because the same kind of thing is going on not only in Pennsylvania. It's going all across the country and around the world now, and you're beginning to hear more about it on TV and radio.
I wonder what was significant about 1973, which incidentally was the year I was born. So I kind of chuckle when I hear that. That 73 was a big year in the paranormal.
Yeah, it was. And it was interesting because, one, it was during the fall of 1973 that the United States experienced a major wave of UFO activity. There was a lot of national newspaper stories for weeks and weeks. Many significant cases happened during the fall and later of 73. Back here in Pennsylvania, it began the first day of the year, continued to the end of the year, and a lot of the Bigfoot activity continued into 1974. And we've had Bigfoot sightings every year since then here in Pennsylvania, and some of these cases are just amazing.
I heard that the Bigfoot, the footprints can be up to 22 inches long. Do you believe that, Stan?
I can tell you, most of them are not that big. We had one case, and it wasn't 73, where we had an unusual set of footprints show up. And they were around 21 inches long. If they were a hoax, they were one of the best hoaxes I had ever seen. And they were not your typical footprints whatsoever. And that's another thing. That's another aspect of these cases. During 1973 in Pennsylvania again, and, well, we'll talk about the 73 stuff. There were a lot of three-toed footprints that were showing up, but also your typical five-toed tracks you see on TV all the time. A lot of people don't know, but around the country where you have a history of Bigfoot, say Pacific Northwest, other areas, even Australia, you got three-toed footprints showing up as well. But in some cases, you've got four-toed footprints showing up. And then in Pennsylvania, we've looked into numerous other incidents that were, again, the people were very credible, the story seemed credible, the evidence we saw was credible, there was no indication of fabrication of the cast or made. Some of these were more unusual tracks. For example, in the suburb of Pittsburgh in 73, they were finding what were basically pungent tracks or ape tracks. And, of course, we have no apes in Pennsylvania, but they were being reported during the same time all this Bigfoot stuff was going on. Those kind of tracks have been reported around the country as well. So there's just, first of all, one, you can't have so many type of unknown creatures out there scientifically. At the same time, you've got so many credible people from many, many states who don't know each other who are reporting the same thing. So you can't just dismiss this. And, you know, it's not just Bigfoot I deal with. We deal with these Thunderbird sightings. We deal with all kind of really strange creatures. My latest book, Creepy Cryptids, has all kind of bizarre creature reports, things that people never heard of before. And the point is, these people have no reason to make up the story. They're giving me great detail. They want no publicity. They have nothing to gain. And yet they're telling us so many similar things. I mean, why would a police officer contact me and tell me about this strange, hairless, skinny, humanoid creature with a glowing head And then weeks later, we're getting other somewhat similar reports from widespread areas. And then years later, now all over the country, we hear about these reports. I mean, this is the kind of things that are going on, and you can't just dismiss all these cases.
Wow. Well, I appreciate you. We're running out of time. I appreciate you taking the time. You're telling me stories I've never heard of, so it's great information. What now, if people want to learn more about you or check out your books, where can they do that?
Well, my website is stangordon.info, stangordon.info. There's phone numbers and email numbers on there that they can reach out to me. Best email is paufo@comcast.net. All of my books are available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. That's the fastest way to get them and the best way to get them anymore. And my latest book is called Creepy Cryptids and Strange UFO Encounters of Pennsylvania. My Solid Invasion book goes into great detail about those really strange cases with UFOs and Bigfoot seen together and the mystery men that showed up at the time and really interesting stuff. So you can check my four books out on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com.
Well, cool. We got a few minutes. Sherry, do you have anything to add before we wrap up?
No, pretty much. I'm just going to probably just go and plug myself in really quick. So, if anybody want to get a hold of me, I'm in Chinese medicine and been practicing for 25 years. So medical Qigong therapy, if anybody want to get a hold of me, they can get a hold of me on my website, www.psychicmediumsherry@cheri.com. And anybody can get a hold of me at Psychic Medium Sherry on Facebook, and it's C-H-E-R-I. And go ahead and just leave a message, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. That's pretty much about it. And I will be at the Origin Ghost Conference this coming next month, I believe.
And one thing I'd like to mention if you have a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of events I'll be speaking at this year. I start my speech, my conferences in March this year. But they will be announcing this officially in a few weeks, but there's going to be a new, somewhat historical UFO conference called the Hangar 18 UFO Conference. It'll be held September 20th through the 22nd of 2024, and it's going to be held at the historic Hope Hotel located at the legendary Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio. And it's going to be, I think, a very, very interesting event. I'm honored to have been asked to be one of the speakers for it, but I'm sure you'll be hearing a lot more about it. In the next few weeks, their website will be coming up alive. It'll be under Hangar 18 UFO Conference.
Ooh, I've got to check that out.
That sounds awesome, especially on Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. I think that's where, isn't that where people claim the Roswell crash debris was sent? I could be wrong.
That is correct. And that's also where the case I investigated, the Keksberg UFO crash in 65, we also know that that object was taken to Wright-Patterson.
Makes you wonder what's going on at Wright-Patterson.
Well, there's a lot of history. That's another show.
Yeah. Well, thanks. We know how busy you are, and thank you for sharing all these wonderful stories tonight and taking the time to come on.
Thanks for having me again. It's good talking to you.
You are amazing. Thanks very much for sharing your experience, and we'd love to have you back one of these days again, Stan.
Okay. I'm sure sometime in the future we'll talk again.
Yes, we will. Thank you. Thank you for your time. We appreciate you. Yay.
Absolutely. Well, Sherry, we're about that time, which means it's almost dinner time. So unless you have anything else to add, we'll close her out. Are you there, Sherry? Oh, wait. I muted the wrong number. I do apologize. Hey, Sherry, I'm eager to eat my pizza. So thanks again, Stan. And unless you have anything else to add, Sherry, I will call it a
thank
night.
You. We want to thank you for our return guest and much to you. Be safe. Everybody, thank you for taking care of Paranormal Horizons and being part of it. We try and keep the website, or not the website, but the Facebook page open with a few memes here and there. But, yes, thank you for supporting us after all these years and just being part of us.
Absolutely. Well, we hope everybody has a safe and fantastic week, and we will probably be back next Sunday, 7 p.m. West Coast time. If not, we will see everyone in the future. Have a great and fantastic week. Good night, everyone.
Take care, everybody. Peace.